I am Napoleon Bonaparte, the conqueror of nations. I have conquered dukes and earls. I drove kings from their thrones. I've defeated Tsars of Russia, both Warsaw and Prussia. But now I am transported on to St. Helena's shore.
The ballad Napoleon Bonaparte, sung there by Lorna Matthews, depicts the French leader's exile to the island of St. Helena and was one of many songs dedicated to the Little Corporal, who was often seen in the Irish ballad tradition as both a hero and an ally. I'm Therese McIntyre, and in this episode of Hero Songs, we'll be exploring songs about three historical figures who, like Napoleon, are lamented as lost leaders. People such as Home Rule advocate Charles Stewart Parnell, and this ballad, one of two versions of The Blackbird of Avondale.
Pray pay attention to what I say. With a pen and paper I do endeavour to praise our leader in a simple way.
That version of The Blackbird of Avondale, sung there by Cathal McConnell. We'll be talking about both the Napoleon and Parnell laments later in the programme, as well as our third hero song, Bonnie Prince Charlie, and this beautiful Gaelic ballad. Mogilamar, the 18th century lament of the defeat of Bonnie Prince Charlie, and Mary Black's contemporary version there. But why have these history stories become the basis of enduring songs? And what do they tell us? Here's Grace Toland of the Irish Traditional Music Archive.
One of the ways ordinary people, and I say ordinary with my tongue in my cheek, ordinary people could relate to history in a different way other than drafts, bills, hearing about debates in the House of Lords at one stage or even in the Dáil in Ireland. They engaged in a different way through personifying a period in history with a certain person. In communities, it was almost a way of remembering communally what history is about and how it related to them themselves, not just about how it relates to politicians. So I think it's an ordinary man's story of the life he was living, and it's also bound up with political aspiration. I mean, the relationship between Ireland and Britain, that has always been described and personified in different ways. So all of that plays out through songs, and in a way, it's almost a scapegoat for not having to say anything too rebellious yourself personally. But if you sing about something, it almost gives you a distance that you're actually not saying, I don't like somebody. But if I sing about somebody who didn't like somebody else, maybe that's my way of getting it across without actually personally being responsible. So I think there's a little bit of the Irish are good at using other people to say things about themselves.
Of the three characters I'm exploring today through song, only one, Parnell, is Irish. The other two, Napoleon and Bonnie Prince Charlie, are external. Perhaps when most people today hear Mogilamar, they think of it as a Celtic love song, but it was written in the mid-18th century by a Gaelic poet, Sean Clorach MacDonald, in the form of an Aisling poem, where a female, often representing Ireland, laments her hero. The hero lover is Bonnie Prince Charlie himself, the Stuart pretender to the throne. Charles Stewart was the leader of the Jacobite Rising in 1745, seeking to claim the throne, which ended in defeat at the Battle of Culloden. I asked historian Maura Cronin at Mary Immaculate College Limerick who he was and why he became an Irish hero.
Bonnie Prince Charlie is one of the so-called pretenders to the throne. He's one of the Stuart family who had been displaced by King William in 1690. And he is the great white hope of those who want to restore the Stuarts. He's probably not a hero in terms of being extremely heroic or indeed of doing very much. But in a way, he's the heir apparent to be the rightful king, as it were, in the minds of those who support the Stuarts. He is a tragic hero because he never gets his throne, or if it is his throne. He's young. He's relatively good looking. Well, that's what the general idea is. He is linked, again, partly fictitiously, partly in reality, with his sweetheart, Flora MacDonald. A bit like Robert Emmet, that he's remote, he's young, he's a gentleman, he is good looking, and he has a sweetheart. So there's a whole sense of romance about him. And of course he fails, which just makes it all more romantic again. Again, I think in the Irish songs, it's really a part of that. Obsession is not fair, but I'll call it obsession, with the idea of dispossession, that the Irish have been, in their own minds at least, dispossessed of their lands. Charlie has been dispossessed of his throne. So it is this sense in which there is a kind of a common bond.
Poets like McConnell reflect Irish Jacobite support and their hopes pinned on the young Stuart pretender. You hear in the chorus, Sé Maléach Mogilmar, sung here first by the chieftains. He's my hero, my gallant love. And then by Shano singer Iarla Ó Leanord, who has a close relationship with the song, which is also known as Bím Sibhuan ar Bort Cachló.
There's something about the song. I often even think myself that it would make a great anthem because it just has the qualities. It's singable. It just calls for people to sing it. It has that call in it. Also, there is the inherent sense of belonging and loss. There's that flux, if you like. There's belonging and there's loss. There's coming and there's going. That's a very powerful kind of basic structure to any song. Like this verse, Níl Árann Cúach go Suairt Gair Nón, Is Níl Gó Gáir a Gwíltiv Cnó, Ná Madin Háuriging Launtiv Cioig, Ó Squílug Ueng an Búachal Bio. He's talking there about the fact that the cuckoo does not speak on the branch, the dog is not heard barking in the wooded forest, the sun doesn't shine in the misty glen since he went away. So there's many, many verses like that in this song where the idea of loss is perpetually cycled around, so it gains momentum as the song goes along. It's just the power of repetition in some ways, which is, I think, central to Irish music.
You're listening there to Iarla Ó Leanord's own version of Mogilimar. But today you'll hear the song in unlikely places, like the TV advert for Specsavers. Using it as an iconic sound of being traditionally Irish. Ó Rialla died very young, at just 40, and he had requested for the song to be performed at his funeral in 1971. Iarla was only a boy, and he remembers the choir under Ó Rialla's son Padraig beginning to create their own version of the song in the early 70s. Mogilimar effectively became, in that reworking, a lament for all lost chieftains and for Ó Rialla himself.
When Sean Ó Rialla passed away at a very early age, 71, the choir gathered together, I don't know, I just think to form a song, if you like, that would enable them, it seems to me at any rate, to engage in celebration of a hero, and Sean Ó Rialla being that hero. It became then, as time went on, associated with the choir. Well, when I was researching the song Gilimar for my master's studies some years ago, I was very lucky that I had a very close friend in the choir, Don Lully Hahn, who has passed since. He was a wonderful, wonderful man. He was, in effect, the scribe of the choir. He was a real insight for me as well into the process of how the Cúile choir version of Mogilimar was stuck together. I'll just read you a little bit here of what he said. A year or so after Sean's death, Padraig called for a choir practice, which was very commonplace down the house. We'd be standing around the same piano Sean was playing. And here's Don Lully Hahn saying, "We were gathered at the Ó Rialla house Mikey O'Sullivan was there with Jeremiah O'Riordan, Eugene, myself, and I suppose Don Loney and some other of the lads. There may have been one or two of the All-in-Ards present, but they were young and may have not had much to do with things as they were. Maybe they were in the kitchen, fooling around with the O'Riordan children. It's hard to tell. But we were inside in the living room at any rate, and Padraig had this tape and he put it on. And if my memory serves correctly, the man who was singing was Donal O'Buchla. He was an old man, and you could recognise from the tape, his was an old voice. He told us that this was a tape that his father had collected, and he played us a song from it. And I think that the verse which affected me most was, Gilamar sa shal fui chú, gus eire gulair fui chlóki rú, suan na shéan ni vores féin, o luog again, ma Gilamar.
I have found neither rest nor peace since my loved one went far away. The poignant closing lines of Mogillamar, sung there by Irlo Leonard. As with Bonnie Prince Charlie, it's not uncommon to find ballads in both the Scottish and the Irish tradition that sing the praises of Napoleon.
Attention, pay both young and old to these few lines that I'll unfold. It is the deeds of great Napoleon I'm going to relate. He was as valiant a Corsican as ever stood on Europe's land. I'm inclined to sing his praises, so ennobled was his heart. For in every battle manfully he strove to gain the victory.
That was the late Frank Hart singing Napoleon Bonaparte, one of several ballads with that title. When I first started singing and studying the songs myself, I was quite surprised to find that there was a vast corpus of Napoleonic songs and wondered why the Irish would choose to honour a French leader in such a way. Last week, we heard how Robert Emmet sought Napoleon's help in vain, so I asked archivist Terry Moylan about this Irish-French connection.
I think Napoleon was seen as an actor on the political stage who might possibly deliver Ireland from the economic subjugation of England. His war with England looked as if it would lead to a complete political revolution throughout the continent on the same lines as the one that had occurred in America. That's what radicals and liberals hoped for, and it seemed as if Napoleon might be the man to complete it. Of course, he wasn't. His coup established him as a dictator rather than a democrat. It was hoped that Napoleon would actually invade Ireland, and in 1798 it seemed as if he was on the point of doing so. He had his fleet and army assembled at Toulon in France, but when he set sail it was for Egypt that he headed rather than for Ireland, which was a crushing disappointment for the United Irishmen.
There in the field he valiant stood and said, while I have life and blood, I will not die a coward, I will fight and play my part. I have always proved myself a man, but now I can no longer stand.
The remarkable amount of Napoleonic ballads, some for and some against the French leader, reflect the significance of the Napoleonic Wars throughout Europe. But in England's folk song tradition, it is of course the Duke of Wellington at the Battle of Waterloo, and not Napoleon, who is celebrated as the hero. And here is Maggie Boyle singing The Green Linnet, an Irish love song to Boney.
To view the green banks of the Rhine, when an empress he saw, and the robes that she was wearing, all over with diamonds did shine.
For Maura Cronin, it is failure that makes the hero, and it's Napoleon's defeat which has given us so many laments.
Napoleon fails in the long run when he is defeated at Waterloo by Wellington. But again, when he's on St. Helena, where he's exiled to after 1815, there's always the hope he will come back, or the hope that his son will come back, young Boney. So I think just as Bonnie Prince Charlie is the son of the pretender and the great hope, so Napoleon is a hope himself, but his son may well come back and do whatever they hope he'll do, which is free the Irish. Now, nobody ever said from what, but in a sense he is this great hero. And I think in the case of Napoleon, because he was a military genius and because he had so many amazing victories, that puts a new ingredient into him, which we're not used to often in the Irish hero syndrome. And in fact, the interesting thing about Boney, if I can call him that, is he's admired, he's adulated in British folk song as well. Now, they don't like him, but they talk about the Bonnie Bunch of Roses. The Bonnie Bunch of Roses, Britain managed to defeat Napoleon, even though he was so great.
Maggie Boyle there with the Green Linnet.
Farewell, you splendid citadel.
Probably one of the best-known Napoleonic ballads is the one we heard briefly at the opening of this episode. My name is Napoleon Bonaparte, or Farewell to Paris, sung here by Frank Hart.
My name's Napoleon Bonaparte, I'm the conqueror of all nations. I have banished German legions, and I've sent kings from their throne. I have conquered dukes and earls and splendid congregations. But now they have transported me onto St. Helena's shore.
No one knows who wrote it, but for Grace Toland, it's a song she forever associates with Frank Hart.
The burning sands and the rocky cliffs.
My introduction to Napoleonic song, like many other people in Ireland, really comes from the work of Frank Hart and from the Gaoling Singers Club in Dublin, whereas when I came as a singer from Inishowen, I was aware of Napoleonic songs, but there seemed to be an awful lot of them sung in Dublin. With Frank Hart then, the great collector, the great singer, the great sharer of songs, he themed many of his later works into the famine, into the navy, and one of his great collections was, of course, the Napoleonic collection. My name's Napoleon Bonaparte.
Which wounded my heart sore. But the female train I ne'er shall blame, for they did never me defame. When they saw my sword in battle flame, they then did me adore.
This song is giving you some historical fact. It's giving you some historical bias. It's from the words of Napoleon looking back at what happened and how he was, as he thought, betrayed by Grouchy, and I'm sure the French don't pronounce it as Grouchy, but here in Ireland it's sung as Grouchy. So it's very much a man who's looking back at his career, looking back, my name's Napoleon Bonaparte, I'm the conqueror of all nations.
Now I'm in the allied yoke, but with fire and sword I made them smoke. I have conquered Dutch and Danes, and I surprised the Grand Seigneur. I defeated Austrians and the Russians, both Portuguese and Prussians. Like the great King Alexander, our proud Caesar of yore.
I like songs that are personified, so I do like the I Am Napoleon Bonaparte rather than a big list of historical events. I think it's very easy then to identify with the character, to think who he was, to picture the grandeur, the splendour and the awfulness of the situations that he found himself and that he put his soldiers in.
For full 3 days I stormed the plain, my freedom's course for to maintain. Many thousands there I did leave slain and covered in their gore. I never fled without revenge, nor to the allied armies cringed. But now my sword is sheathed, and the Paris is no more.
By the sweet bay of Dublin, while carelessly strolling, I sat myself down by a
a green myrtle shade, reclined on the beach as the wild waves were rolling, in sorrowful condolence I saw the fair maid.
I'm in Glasnevin Cemetery with local historian Shane McComash to visit the resting place of our final hero, Charles Stewart Parnell, and to talk about the song written just shortly after Parnell's arrest, called The Blackbird of Avondale, one of two songs under that title.
His funeral in 1891 was the largest funeral that ever came to the cemetery. Over 100,000 people came through the streets of Dublin. The funeral didn't arrive here until 8 o'clock in the evening, and they buried him under lamplight. And people came here all through the night and all through the next day. When they came here to the funeral, they took ivy that grows around here in the trees and walls, and that's where Ivy Day gets its name from. And all sorts of people were at the funeral. James Joyce as a young boy, Countess Markovich, Maud Gamarbride, lots of these people who were to be very prominent in Irish politics in the coming decades were here as young children or young adolescents at the funeral of Parnell. Parnell dictated in his will that just a stone with his name would be placed on it. And for a very long time it wasn't there. It was only placed there in 1939 when they went to Poolavuca in Wicklow and purchased some Wicklow granite off a farmer and placed it here above the grave of Parnell. There's an old saying that all political life ends in failure, you know, and Parnell's a good example of that. The scandal of the marriage of Kitty O'Shea tore the parliamentary party apart, and Parnell took some of that support with him and then died a year later, you know, so it was tragedy. But, you know, sometimes our heroes, our martyrs, need that tragic ending to propel them into the future.
Now, this song is actually one of the first traditional songs I ever learnt when I first started competing in the Flock Yoles, and I still love to sing it. We know very little about it. It was probably written in 1881, just after Parnell's arrest with the other leaders of the Land League. Long before the Pigott forgeries, which attempted to frame Parnell, or his ultimate downfall in his love and marriage to the divorcee Catherine O'Shea. For historian Felix Larkin, the fair maid in the song, as in Mogillamar, is once again Ireland.
Oh, Ireland, my country, awake from your slumbers and give back my blackbird so dear unto me, and let everyone know by the strength of your numbers that we as a nation would wish to be free.
The first verse refers to a fair maid, and I think that we can assume is an image of Ireland, Cathleen O'Hurahan, or a variation on that fairly standard theme. Interestingly, in the fifth verse, the last line is, we as a nation would wish to be free, which places him in a hero image, but it's not clear exactly what is meant by freedom in this context. He is a home ruler, he's a devolutionist rather than a republican. In the song, he is presented much more in the tradition of Robert Emmet or the Manchester Martyrs, which of course is not the political context which is appropriate for his career.
And God grant that my country will soon be a nation, and bring back my blackbird to sweet
At the Irish Traditional Music Archive, Grace Toland found me a copy of the original ballad broadsheet of The Blackbird of Avondale.
We only have a copy of it in the Irish Traditional Music Archive, and the original, you can see it in the National Library of Ireland. These were originally a long, narrow sheet. At the top, the woodcut on this one is a harp, which is the national emblem. Then you get the quite dark black lettering of the Blackbird of Avondale, all in caps. And for a lot of the songs, and you're going to find this through all the ballad sheets, is they'll have an alternative name. The naming of songs in the traditional canon is quite difficult. So this song could have been called The Blackbird of Avondale, it could have been called The Arrest of Parnell, or some people could have called it By the Sweet Bay of Dublin.
Her roses changed to mourning that once was so glorious. I stood in amazement to hear her sad wail. Her heartstrings burst out in wild accents of glorious, saying, where is my blackbird of sweet Avondale?
Blackbird was a way of naming someone without actually saying their names. It has a beautiful air. It really has a lovely air. And but the words are quite poetic. They're quite 19th century.
There's no habitation for one to his country so loyal and true. So give him his freedom without hesitation.
Judith Weikle with her version of The Blackbird of Avondale, or The Arrest of Parnell.
For to hear the blackbird of Avondale.
And we opened with that very different, far more political song of the same name, sung by Cathal MacConnell, which compares Parnell to Daniel O'Connell and seems to be written long after the events, and ends like this.
To free her country, she's not a friend. And if our songster should be arrested, then a British monster we must soon assail. And other warblers will tune for ages the notes they took from sweet Avondale.
Cathal MacConnell there. Next week, we're in the heart of 1916 and talking Roger Casement and the Lonely Bannistrand.
"'Twas on Good Friday morning, all on an April day."